The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, and let's do a sound test. Do you hear okay? Everyone's just with that little bit of talking, you can know? A little bit louder. So let's see. Is that a little bit better still? You can hear now? Okay, thank you. So this evening I'd like to talk a little bit more, continue where what I was talking about last week. Last week I discussed the very beginning of the instructions the Buddha gave for mindfulness practice. And it was just the beginning. In fact, the way it's worded, it's the precursor for doing mindfulness. And what I described was that, what I said was that the instructions are, the pre-instructions are, to put aside greed and distress for the world. And that seems like a tall order. Some people come to do the practice because of their greed and distress, and they're told to put it aside before they can even do the practice. But the practice was to help you put it aside. So, catch 22, right? And so I offered my interpretation that what this means is that we put aside our fixation on the external world of objects, the things that we can want a lot, and the things that we're distressed or upset or angry with. And that it isn't that we stop being desirous or stop being distressed or stop being angry, but rather than but what we do is we turn the attention around 180 degrees. So our attention, what we pay attention to and get interested in, is our subjective experience. And if we're angry or full of greed, then we're interested in the subjective experience of anger or greed, as opposed to continuing to think about what we're angry about, or can think about what we want, or what we're distressed about. And so you're allowed to feel and do what you want, but it's a shift of perspective of what you look at and what you pay attention to. So in a way, there's a turning back to yourself to really experience here in this body of yours what your own subjective lived experience is like, what it feels like for you to be in this body, in this mind, in this heart, having the feelings, the thoughts, the desires, the motivations that you have. So there has to be that kind of turning. And so with that turning, mindfulness, the mindfulness practice in this instructional manual, goes through four different domains or areas, sometimes it's called foundations, on which we develop and heighten our awareness, develop our capacity to be here in a very lucid way. And those four areas can be seen as a path to go deeper and deeper inside, to come in, settle in, progressively letting go of our objectification, our thoughts and our concerns, and really developing a high quality attention to our subjective experience. And there's a journey kind of you can take through this. So these four domains begin in a sense on what can be considered more the outer part of the subjective experience, which is the body. The body is this the coarse, basic experience of being in a body. And once you're in your body, connected to your body, that gives you the opportunity, if you settle in and relax, to start noticing that in that body of yours, that everything that you experience, mind, body, heart, occurs somehow within this domain of the body, the subject experience. And as you kind of settle into that full experience, the next stage, next domain, is to notice something very simple about your experience that is often overlooked when we have the complex relationship to something. We have stories and ideas and desires and aversions and identities and things connected to it. And then we notice that things are, the experiences we have generally fall into being pleasant or unpleasant. And sometimes there are neither of those two, but often they're just, that's the criteria. It's very simple, and it can be kind of the inner ecosystem. As you pay attention, you can, at the same time almost, you can be aware that one part of your body feels uncomfortable and one part is comfortable. Start noticing where the discomfort is, or where the comfort is. And these are very important stepping stones to go deeper. Then as we go deeper in and really allow ourselves to feel that and massage or be present for the pleasant and unpleasant, not to shy away from it, not to grab onto it, but really be present. Accompany yourself. Be a companion to yourself. Breathe with yourself as you experience the pleasant, unpleasant domain of this inner life. There's something very powerful about opening up to what the body's really feeling and letting it take its course, letting it unfold the way it wants to. As we do this, we start noticing something deeper. The journey is inward, ever deeper. And what's deeper, I mean, you could argue with me, maybe some of you don't feel it's deeper, but what's deeper in this journey is kind of the inner quality of being, the quality of state of mind that we have. And the quality of kind of the attitude of how we live at the moment. And we can have attitudes or moods or states of being that are primarily characterized by greed, by desire, wanting something really badly. We can be characterized by having ill will, aversion, hostility. We can be characterized by being deluded and lost, or characterized by fear. A variety of different things. Or we can be characterized by opposite states. It can be inner life can be characterized by being loving, compassionate, generous, wise, understanding. It's not just like you, it's like an attitude. You feel this clarity of these states. And then as we settle in, the state of the mind can be noticed when it's contracted and tight, restricted, caught up, scattered. We talk sometimes about a scattered mind. We have to collect ourselves before we can do something because we're so scattered. And you can notice these things. And as we're looking at the quality of the mind, we're talking about something which is more intimate to ourselves, more important to us than the body, perhaps even. And more important than whether things are pleasant or unpleasant. So that's why I like to call it a journey inwards, so what's more important. And as we get familiar with this world, the inner world of the mind and the attitude and how we are, then we get into what's much more primary and maybe deeper inside, and that is the operating system of how we operate, what we're actually doing, the little choices we make, tiny, tiny choices, maybe invisible to the ordinary street mind walking around. But when your mind gets really quiet and settled in meditation, you can start seeing the subtle choices the mind makes to get involved in certain thoughts, certain emotions. You notice how certain attitudes and emotions and desires color and shape and affect the mind. We notice how, we're sort of noticing kind of the inner workings of it. And that inner working is where we have the most choice to make a difference for ourselves. And that's that. And that inner working is where the domain of freedom and liberation that Buddhism focuses on is that. But it really requires being settled and intimate and really present for yourself in a deep way. So often it's seen as a path of meditation. It doesn't have to be limited to meditation. But this, it's a kind of a journey inwards. And as I tried to say last week, is that sometimes it's very helpful to go in the opposite direction we want to go in life in order to go forward. So I talked about sometimes you have to crouch before you leap. You know, you've got to go up. You want to go up, right? But you bend down first. Then you can make a good jump up. And there's many circumstances in life where we do something that seems like it's narrowing us, but it actually opens us up in the process. So if you can go look at a small little circle of glass, little glass window, little glass lens, And if it's connected to a huge telescope, you certainly narrow the focus of your what you're paying attention to, but through that lens in the telescope, you see a vast cosmos. You see something really big. Or if you, what's another example like that where you go kind of narrow, go in, and then you can come out and really wide. So this is what happens in meditation practice. There's a way in which we go into ourselves. We kind of, the traditional language is you seclude yourself from the world around you. You close your eyes. You're not paying attention to the external world. And so you seclude yourself. And people who hear this sometimes say, these Buddhists, you know, they're aloof, they're disconnected, they're shutting out the world. I want to be in the world and present for everything. And that's, you know, these Buddhists. And but in fact, what happens is that if you go in this way, in, there's a clearing that goes on, a housekeeping that goes on in the inner mental life, that the experience literally is that the mind becomes big and wide. That rather than the mind getting, you know, more contracted and narrow, the mind opens up. And it turns out that many people's minds, when they're going around in ordinary life, when they're caught up in desires and aversions and preoccupations and fears, they might be connected to many things in the world and paying attention and looking and wanting, but if they really notice the subjective quality of their mind, the mind is actually very narrow and tight and limited, even though they're kind of paying attention to all stuff out there, right? Sit and close your eyes and get settled and centered, and you're not noticing much in the world, but the mind gets wide, expansive, and clear, and it settles out the muck and the preoccupations and concerns, and that literally the experience sometimes can be becoming the mind becomes very, or the awareness becomes very, very spacious, expanded and open. Sometimes it becomes so spacious and expanded that it doesn't make any sense to call awareness yourself, or like it belongs to me, it's mine. As soon as you say it's my awareness or I'm the awareness or anything, it's just like trying to take your watercolors. You're a great, beautiful artist. You've been practicing for years and years. You're one of the great world experts in watercolors. And so you're asked to make a beautiful watercolor on this. There's a frame. But instead of having canvas on it, it's just nothing. It's empty frame. So you have to make your watercolor on air. Right, you take the picture. It doesn't work, right? So the same thing with the mind is really open and free. You try to say, I'm Gil, or this is my awareness, or I'm great, or I'm terrible, or whatever you want to say about yourself. It just doesn't compute. It doesn't work, you know, because awareness is so free and so spacious. So we go in, and then we come out, and then when we open our eyes after meditation, it's possible to carry that with us into the world. And it's not uncommon for people to feel much more intimate with the world, more connected to the world, more available to the world, because they're calmer and more relaxed, less preoccupied, than they were before they meditated. So meditation then is a way of going, you go in, not to disconnect from the world, but you go in so that when you come out, you're present in a much higher, better way, in a higher quality way. So your connection to the world is actually better and improved. Make some sense? So these four areas of practice then can be seen as this journey in that then brings you out in a nice way. And it begins by the subjective experience of being in your body. And I can't underscore enough this importance of the subjective experience. And I'm not sure what in philosophy or English language what subjective really means, but I'll try to explain. What it means is that we don't think about our experience, because when we think, we're objectifying, we're in objects, we're in the world of about. What we do is we feel. The subjective experience is what our felt sense experience, how it actually feels through our body. So if you are angry, you can, you know, you don't think about yourself being angry. the subjective experience is what it feels like to be angry. As soon as you're upset that you feel yourself and you get upset, you don't get upset unless you've objectified. You're back into, you know, thinking about it. Stay very simple. And just feel. And just feel the subjective experience. So the first thing the Buddha said about the instructions was feel the body in the body. They're beautiful instructions. To feel the body in the body. Some people say this means to feel the body in and of itself. To allow yourself to feel your physicality, the physical felt sense experience of being a physical being, without adding anything to it, without commentary or judgments or should-haves and better be or, you know, all kinds of, we add stuff, just to keep it really simple. Come back, be here. Some people say that to experience the body in the body is to really go inside the inner experience. What does it actually feel like from the inside out? So some of you know that when I give guided meditation instructions, I'll give the instructions. I won't say now. Watch your breathing. You know, as if you're up in the control tower watching your breath. I'll say, what is your body's experience of breathing? Or if it's about the body, what's your body's experience of itself? How does your body experience breathing? And I say that in the hope that people then will get kind of a little strange way of saying it, that they get curious and interested. Well, the body, the subjective experience, how does a body experience it? Well, then you're in your body, the body in the body. It's, oh, it feels this way and that way. And then stay with that. So you might experience your breathing, the breath in itself, the body in itself, the sensations of the body. And I find that remarkable things begin to happen if I sit down and get quiet and really kind of feel and sense into the subjective experience, the felt sense, the feeling of my body. But again, not in the control tower like I'm watching it. I'm external from it, but almost as if I am it, I'm in it. The awareness is in it. Giving lots of permission for the felt sense, the experience of the body to show itself. And it's not uncommon, like it happened today when I sat down with you to meditate, that one of the things I quickly became aware of was I was uncomfortable in my body a little bit. There was places of comfort and places of discomfort. And I've been busy today running around. I went to Berkeley, and I was moving things out of my mother's storage unit. And it was kind of complicated stuff. And back here, and then here I'd been there, but I was not being here at work meant that emails piled up. People wanted responses, this and that. My family, this and that. So I sat down, and my sitting down here was partly a chance to check in to myself, and I discovered that there was a band around my rib cage, just kind of above the solar plexus, where when I breathed was a little bit uncomfortable, kind of, you know, a little bit unpleasant, kind of like I couldn't quite breathe fully, like I was held in a little bit tight. And lo and behold, that's the consequence of how I lived my day today. I was running around doing things in my head, trying to get things done, and I didn't take enough time to really just settle in and unwind until I came here, and I felt this contraction. So what I didn't do was said, gee, you know, I'm a bad person. You know, and here I am in meditation teacher. I've been doing this for 40 years, meditating, and, you know, and this is rather embarrassing. I should be just always kind of like floating in clouds and eating, just eating light and, you know, whatever, you know. And I certainly don't want to admit it to all these good people that I should feel discomfort sitting down. But in fact, that's what I felt. And I've learned to trust that. It's fine to feel that way. I didn't make it a big deal. But I've learned that it's really great to stay present for that discomfort, to breathe with it, to open to it, to allow it to be there. There's a radical difference between having discomfort versus having discomfort and offering it quality attention. It's almost like you have two different bodies. You're always breathing, right? And maybe sometimes your breathing's contracted and limited or whatever it is. But to breathe versus to breathe with conscious awareness, so you're breathing into awareness, fully aware, it's like two different, it's like radical different universes. It's really something. And so to offer your awareness over to whatever's going on in your body, to feel that, so in this case, I felt my discomfort. And I just trusted it. I breathed with it. I let myself be with it. I used it as kind of the focal point of my concentration, just be with that. And then after a while, I became aware that it was diminishing. And then around it, in other parts of my body, started to feel more comfortable and more relaxed. And after a while, that contraction and discomfort I had in my ribcage went away. And I was much more aware that what was left in the body was much more pleasant. Not dramatically, so more pleasant. So it first required me to be in my body, to experience the body in and of itself. And as I did that, I became aware of the comfort and discomfort, the pleasant and unpleasant, and I stayed with that. And then as it started to shift and change, especially as the discomfort went away, then I started noticing what I talked about earlier. I started noticing the quality of my being, quality of my inner life. And it started to feel kind of nice. Not dramatically so, but it started to feel more expansive and open. The boundaries of my body didn't seem quite so defined as I had earlier. And I started feeling some delight. Well, this is pretty cool to sit here and just breathe and do nothing, and it's very nice. So this was a journey, you know. So come into the body, feel what's there, feel the feelings. It opens up to this beautiful inner quality of our being as it is. So the subjective experience, the felt sense, the feeling of the body, the way the body experiences itself, to come back to that over and over again, it's very, very important, because some of the, it provides a reference point. It provides very important information about our lives. I would say that some of the most significant experiences of our life, for most people, not experiences externally in the world, but the greatest experiences of happiness, of peace, of love, of compassion, are closely connected to, you have to be present in your body to really feel them, let them mature and to grow. If you're lost in your head, lost in your thoughts and your preoccupations, there's not much room to feel peace and joy, love, compassion, because those kinds of emotions arise through our body, with our body. That's how we really know that they're felt sense experiences. So as we drop into our body and start noticing the quality of what it feels like to be alive in our body, we get a reference point or a data point, information, what's really going on for us. So I could have easily not come and meditated here with you this evening and gone running around and more emails to do and, you know, and more people to call and more things to run around and more dishes to wash, and my son's starting high school tomorrow morning, and I'd learned that they have zero period in local high school. Zero period. You know, I used to have six periods, like in the six periods in high school, right? And that was plenty, but he's so lucky he has zero period. What zero period means is that there's so many kids in a local high school now that they can't fit them all in the class, you know, in the regular. So zero period is this period before first period. So he has to be at school at 7:30 because he got assigned to zero period. And so I could be home, and I have to make his lunch now, and, you know, and he wants me to make his breakfast. He has a particular plan for breakfast. And so I could, you know, I could have been home doing all this stuff, right? Happily doing it. But I would not have noticed the contraction and tightness I had in my chest. And people spend lifetimes not noticing what's here. Now, some people will notice what's here. I mean, so I could notice, it's so uncomfortable. I feel tight and contracted, and this must mean I'm a failure as a human being. You know, certainly in California, ever since Esalen and deep breathing, you know, you're supposed to have a deep breath in California. deep, relaxed. You know, so I've really, you know. So I could feel like I don't like be uncomfortable, and this is bad, and so, you know, a beer would be a good thing. Or, boy, a lot of laughs. Television would be a good thing. Turn it on and ignore, you know. Or one of the great ways, you know, it certainly must be great, or at least frequent ways that people seem to choose, is I can just get angry at someone. You know, just snap. So there's good ways, of dealing with these things. Or I could sit quietly and feel it. And I've learned that feeling it is really significant. So I can feel the discomfort, but the opposite is also very meaningful, and that is that as we relax and start feeling a good subjective experience, the subjective experience of being contented, fulfilled, satisfied, not intellectually, but from the inside out through the body, through the heart, feeling at peace in the body, there's a beautiful feeling of the heart. I call it the heart at home in itself. The heart's at rest in itself. The heart's not anxious, it's not caught up, it's not searching, it's not wanting, it's not dissatisfied. The heart is at peace with itself, in itself. These are subjective experiences that you can feel. If you don't have that habit of the subjective experience of your life, you won't know that your heart is finally settled and at peace in a deep way. That's a subjective felt sense experience. As we start feeling familiar with the subjective experience, what it feels like in our body, and we have access and we experience a higher quality subjective way of being, that becomes a reference point for what's possible. That becomes a reference point to see when we deviate from it, so we can study that and learn from it and maybe make a difference and change it for the better. We can start validating and appreciating how precious and valuable it is to feel really nice from the inside out. And this is, now I'm going to tell you what I think is maybe the most challenging teachings of the evening. As we start having a rich, better, inner subjective life here, this is more valuable than anything you can have experienced in the external world. No matter what happens in the world out there, however beautiful the sunset is, however beautiful the people are that you love or whatever, nothing compares to the richness, the wealth. The Buddhism calls it the wealth. The real wealth is in the inside that comes out. And why that's so radical is that many of us are so easily seduced into being preoccupied with the world out there. What we want to have and get and not have and avoid and fix and deny and go into fantasy and all kinds of things. And it can seem so compelling and so meaningful, that world out there. But it's more valuable here. That's where the greatest thing is. And then if you protest and say, well, here we go with these Buddhists again. Going in, and these Buddhists are so selfish. Buddhists are not selfish, and they're not self-centered, but they're not self-centered, but they're situation-centered, which means that they're centered in the situation and their awareness radiates out from here through themselves. We don't lose ourselves. We don't, we're empty in a sense, but we radiate outwards our awareness. Or to say it in a different way, as we begin to become the caretakers of good subjective experiences, experience of deep sense of inner satisfaction, fulfillment, peace, compassion, love, happiness, that then we open up into the world and can connect to the world through those feelings, through that way of being, which is a much more satisfying way of being in the world then being disconnected from ourselves and in the objectifying the world and trying to fix everything and move things around. So to come back here, feel here. So when I go through my life, it's my intention, it's my effort, it's my practice, when I'm in the world, dealing with the world, not meditating, I try to keep a lot of my attention in my body. I have this idea that it should be 50-50. If I'm talking with someone, 50% of the attention here, 50% of attention there. There's a spiritual teacher that I respect a lot, who he says that he likes to do 80-20. 80% of the attention here and 20% of the attention in the world around him. And it might seem, again, like it's selfish, it's preoccupied, it's disconnected. But I argue the opposite, that even if only 20% of your attention is still left for the world, the quality of those 20% is maybe 1,000 times better than when you gave 100% of your attention to the world. That makes sense, the math? The quality of your 20% that you have left for the world is just so good that people will think that you're fully present for them. So your body. So I'll tell you a little story. So this I have read. Thus have I read. So it probably happened. Once upon a time, God was in the process of creating the universe. So for 6 days, she was busy, right? Doing all the things. And then it came to be the end of the sixth day, and so she was in a hurry. She wanted to finish the project in 7 days. So it was time to make the humans. And since, you know, God had never done anything like this before, she called in some of the expert angels. There were angels who were social scientists, angels who were psychologists, knew a little bit about political science, you know, and economics, and many of the social study fields, you know, the different angels who specialized in those and brought them together and asked them to please make, you know, figure out how to make a really good, perfect human. And so they went off to discuss this among themselves, and since God had never done this universe thing before, didn't understand about committees. And so it took a long time for the committee to come back. So the whole project of being finished in 7 days, you know, didn't work out so well. But after some months, the committee came back and with a long list of how to make the perfect human and how they'd be emotionally sensitive and have good intellectual capacity and be curious about things and have moral values and all kinds of things. Social intelligence. And God listened and for a while and was silent for a long time and said, well, it sounds really good what you've come up with, but I think something is missing. And they thought, oh no, we're going to have to go back and spend another few months on committee. What's God think is missing? After a while, I think what's missing, what do you think it would be like if you gave them bodies? It hadn't occurred to them that they should have, human beings should have bodies. So we have bodies. You have physical bodies. Your body is not something just lug around. It's not just something that's a vehicle to carry you, you know, from one place to the next. It's not the kind of the channel to go from your brain to your thumbs as you work your phone. Your body is an organism. Your body is an ecosystem. Your body is a temple. Your body is one of the greatest resources you have. One of the, you know, it's the greatest entryways. It's like the doorway into the temple, doorway into a different, very different life, a radically different life. And so this, in the four foundations of mindfulness that the Buddha taught, the first doorway into this realm is the body. To be with your body, to experience your body. And in order to really be with your body and experiences in a deep, thorough way, you have to do that 180-degree turn I talked about. Turn away from thinking about the world out there the best you can, and come around and let yourself feel what's here. And you can even do that with thinking. If you can't stop thinking, then what you do is you try to feel the subjective experience of what it's like to be a human being who's doing so much darn thinking. So be curious and interested. What does it feel like in the brain, in the mind, in the jaws, in the neck? What is a subjective experience like of all this thinking that I can't stop? And if you ask that question, you begin shifting the emphasis. You're shifting where your attention is, and something will begin to unfold. You start coming back to yourself more. So, your body. So what I'd like to do is to encourage you for this week, if those of you are interested, that try to make your body a theme for the week. Not so much, don't think about your body so much. Because if you start thinking about your body, then your body's too much this, not enough that, there's all these problems, right? But don't think about your body, but rather feel your body. Get into the, close your eyes even a lot, just through the day, and get curious. What's your body's experience? How's your body experiencing whatever's going on? If everything's experienced through the medium of your body, if that's like the door into a deeper experience, even a social experience you're in, what does it feel like to be in your body? What is revealed there? What comes to you? So I'd encourage you to make that a frequent practice this week. I think you'll find it very interesting and very meaningful. So we have 5 minutes before the usual end. If anyone has any comments or questions about that they'd like to make, we maybe have time for one. It might be interesting to hear your response to what I had to say. You're all in your bodies. 99% in your bodies and 1% with me. Great. Okay. So, yes. So someone who's in severe pain? That's a difficult one. It depends on the situation. Sometimes in the severe pain, they should take medication, which I learned when I had my tonsils taken out a few years ago. I thought, I can deal with them with anything, and I was a little bit full of myself. I don't like taking this pain medication, so I'll just kind of like, I won't take it. The doctor said, take it this time, right? He was very particular when to take it. But what I didn't know is that tonsillectomy causes a lot of pain because I never had one before. And the other thing I didn't know is that it takes a while for pain medication to work. So I started being in so much pain that I started to shake. And then I took the pill. And then it takes a while to work. So I kept shaking. So yeah, sometimes, it depends what kind of severe pain. But I'll tell you a true story. A woman I knew who had very severe pain, wasn't actually hospitalized because I think she had severe back problems and lived in terrible pain for a long, long time. And there was nothing that doctors seemed to be able to do for her. That's why she was in the hospital. And then there was a Vipassana teacher by the name of Shinzen Young, who has an audio lesson on working with pain. I knew about it when it was a cassette tape, so it's been around for a while, but now you can probably get it downloaded somewhere. And he would call her in the hospital every day and work with her in guided meditation. And he had directed the woman's attention to her body. But what he did was, he said, go find where in your body there's pleasure. There's something pleasant. What she found was inside of her thigh, she found a little square centimeter of pleasure. The rest of her body was in pain. And she learned to focus on that, and that provided a different atmosphere for her mind. And that opened up, and that pleasure in the body began to grow. And that gave her relief the way she never had before. So that's an example of someone who used the body. I know a lot of people who protest when they're told to go experience their pain because it's painful to feel pain. It's counterintuitive. But have found that it's actually by going into it and feeling it, only then can they get the information about how to relax with it, how to open up, how to walk or live in such a way that not to aggravate the pain. But the higher your attention in going into it, the wiser you can live with it. So there are times to avoid it and be very careful. But the whole mindfulness movement that's had such a big impact on our clinical world of pain and stress management has a lot to do with going into it and feeling it, but doing it in a wise way. So it's a really good thing to do, but without knowing the person and what the particular severe pain is, it's a little hard to know exactly. You know, generic advice is not always the best advice. Does that make sense? Okay. So I hope that whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, that your body becomes your temple this week. Thank you.